Apologies to any of you who were hoping for the Beyoncé song, Me, Myself, and I. I know Billie Holiday better than I know Beyoncé. Sorry about that. An elderly gentleman owned an antique shop in a tourist city. And the shop was filled with all kinds of unique and quirky things, fascinating items, piled up in stacks around the store. And one day a tourist came into the shop and looked around and chatted with the owner for a bit, and after a while asked the owner, "What would you say is the strangest, most mysterious thing you have here?" And the owner looked around the store, looked at all of the things that he had there, and he replied to the tourist, "The strangest, most mysterious thing is unquestionably me." A teacher was lecturing her students on modern inventions. And she asked a question of the students, "Can you name something of importance that did not exist 50 years ago?" And a bright young girl who was sitting near the front of the class, her hand shut up and she said, "Me." Sorry, for some of us, we'd have to extend the time frame a little bit, but that's okay. Mysterious, strange, unique, important, me, myself, and I. Yet, sometimes those thoughts seem to run counter to so much that's in the Christian scriptures and Christian tradition. C.S. Lewis, in the words used in our invitation to worship, gives us every reason to suspect the self. You're a bundle of self-centered fears, hopes, greeds, jealousies, and self-conceit. Not the most flattering picture of ourselves, is it? But one that's not all that foreign to a lot of Christian tradition. Here are some words that come from the Eastern monastic tradition of Christianity, written about the 8th century. "There is no greater evil than that of self-love. The winged children of self-love are self-praise, self-satisfaction, gluttony, unchastity, self-esteem, jealousy, and the crown of all these, pride. Pride can drag down not men alone, but even angels from heaven and surround them with darkness instead of light." Today's scripture readings, too, would lead us to be suspicious of any celebrations of the self. James issues a warning against self-ambition, a caution against the cravings of the self. Selfish ambition leads to disorder and wickedness, disputes, and conflicts. We heard a wonderful choir anthem, A Prayer for Peace, and James would say part of the way you might get to peace is to not be so selfish and so ambitious. And the words of Jesus seem to caution a little bit against being too fond of oneself. "Whoever wants to be first must be last and servant of all." Me, myself, and I seems to be a problem for a Jesus spirituality. Self easily inflates, and we need to guard against that. Self craves, and those cravings are trouble. As an alternative, James proposes that we direct ourselves toward being pure and gentle, willing to yield and merciful. And Jesus, as an alternative way of thinking about our lives, offers the image of a child, a virtual nobody in the society of Jesus' time. But I don't know about you, but I find the idea that the self is problematic to be itself problematic. In college, I majored in both philosophy and psychology. I was drawn to psychology first in high school, and I was particularly drawn to the work of Abraham Maslow, one of the people often considered a pioneer in what was called and has been called humanistic psychology. Maslow, in his work, views self-esteem quite differently. No psychological health is possible, Maslow writes, unless this essential core of the person is fundamentally accepted, loved, and respected by others and himself. Now, for Maslow, this wasn't the simple, rather popular idea that we ought to feel good about ourselves. It was more complex and a more robust idea. Self-esteem and self-respect are genuine desires for achievement, for real capacity, competence, and adequacy to the task. In other words, Maslow thinks we have needs for esteem and love that include having some sense of our own ability to make a difference in the world, to affect the world. Last little Maslow quote here, satisfaction of the self-esteem need leads to feelings of self-confidence, worth, strength, capability, and adequacy of being useful and necessary in the world. A much more positive idea of self-esteem than we get sometimes from certain parts of the Christian tradition. Another psychologist from whom I have and continue to learn a lot is a man named Rollo May, and he also writes profoundly about self-esteem. To be sure, May writes, one ought not to think too highly of oneself. A courageous humility is the mark of the realistic and mature person. I like that. But thinking too highly of oneself in the sense of self-inflation and conceit does not come from a greater consciousness of oneself or greater feelings of self-worth. In fact, it comes from just the opposite. Self-inflation and conceit are genuinely external signs of inner emptiness and self-doubt. A show of pride is one of the most common covers for anxiety. So on the one hand, Christian scriptures and tradition, at least in part, caution us against this inflated sense of self, against self-ambition, against too great a concern with one's personal greatness. And psychologists complicate this picture by arguing that self-esteem is important. They also point out that self-inflation is not often doesn't often come from this strong sense of self, but actually is a mask for a fairly weak sense of self, from too little self-esteem, from emptiness and self-doubt. Certainly, Jesus and James were not interested in fostering in our lives emptiness and self-doubt, which ironically feeds a kind of self-aggrandizement that they find problematic. So how do we try to fit all that together? How do we try to fit all of that together? What does an appropriate Christian sense of the self look like? I think William Stringfellow, also in our invitation to worship, is onto something when he said, what it means to be a Christian is wonderfully just synonymous with what it means to be no more and no less than a human being. So what does it mean to be a human being in relation to God and others? What sense of self makes sense? Well, I think a Christian sense of self isn't a denigration of oneself, nor being too enamored with oneself. A Christian sense of self is rooted in strength and in gentleness. And here are some of the elements of it, of this Christian sense of self, I think. A Christian sense of self is rooted above all in knowing that we are unalterably and wonderfully loved by God. The first four words of many people's favorite verse in all of the Bible may not be yours, but it's a lot of people's. The very first four words of that verse are, "For God so loved." Abraham Maslow seems to think psychological health is impossible unless this essential core of who we are is fundamentally accepted and loved and respected by others and by the self. And I frankly don't think spiritual health, a deep spiritual health, is possible unless we know deeply and profoundly and fundamentally that we are accepted and loved by God. We're worthy of respect and self-respect simply because we are. Each of us created uniquely in the image of God. No one can refract that image of God in the exact way you can. But genuine self-esteem has something to do with knowing that we are capable, that we can be adequate to the task. A Christian sense of self recognizes that we have strengths and gifts and limitations. Frankly, the journey with Jesus requires strength and courage. But sometimes our very strengths are also part of our limitations. You have to hand it to the disciples. They are a pretty audacious group of people. They leave everything behind to follow this Jesus who, well, frankly, they don't often get. He says that there's going to be trouble for them in Jerusalem, that his end is death. And they're arguing about who's going to be the greatest. They wanted to be significant. They wanted to matter. They wanted their lives to make a difference. And that's a gift. But it can go awry. A courageous humility is an important part of a Christian sense of self. Courage to see our strengths and courage to see our limitations. And that mark of humility is another essential Christian element of a Christian sense of self. I really like what one person said about humility. Humility is the realistic appraisal of one's strengths and weaknesses, neither overestimating nor underestimating them. To be humble is not to have a low opinion of oneself. It's to have an accurate opinion of oneself. It's the ability to keep one's talents and accomplishments in perspective, to have a sense of self-acceptance and an understanding of one's imperfections, to be free from arrogance and low self-esteem. Humility is recognizing, on the one hand, that we are deeply and wildly loved by God, and at the same time, God isn't finished with us. That sense of being unfinished is also an important element in a Christian sense of self. The disciples keep learning and growing through their journey with Jesus. Sometimes it seems that they're not the quickest learners in the world, as in today's passage, but they keep learning and growing. Jesus welcomes a child in the gospel reading. Children are open and vulnerable and continue to grow. We're invited to continue to grow in that wisdom which is pure and peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits. But to say that being open and vulnerable is an important element in a Christian sense of self means more than being open to our own growth, as important as that is. It means being open to other people, to their joys and concerns, to their hurts and hopes. A Christian sense of self understands that relationships matter, and how we live together with others not only flows from who we are, but shapes who we are. Show by your good life, James writes, that your works are done with gentleness born of wisdom. Welcome children, Jesus says. And in all of this, another essential element in a Christian sense of self is to understand our need for forgiveness. As Christians, we are people with high ideals. We look to Jesus and we want to be like him. We want to be wise and loving, gentle and generous. We want to touch the world in ways that foster justice and peace and reconciliation. We have wonderfully high ideals, and we don't always realize them, and we need forgiveness. Having said that, I want to return to an earlier element in Christian sense of self and just reemphasize it. We are gifted. We have strengths. We are and we do, and we need each other to help us see our gifts and strengths, to use them well and to celebrate our gifts joyously. Throughout its history, the church has often focused on humility to the point of humiliation. We have focused on sin and wrongdoing to the point where we have left people feeling that they're not much good for anything except to beg God for a modicum of love and hope that they're good enough to get some. But that's not the gospel. That's not good news. We've not always done a good job of reminding people of the wild love and grace of God, which loves each of us beyond measure, or of reminding each other that we are created in the image of God with strengths to celebrate joyously. So here's the wonderful paradox and mystery at the heart of this Christian sense of self. At the heart of a Christian sense of self really isn't the self at all, but it's God. It's this God who loves us into being and calls us to blossom. There is in the Talmud, that vast and wonderful collection of Jewish wisdom, this delightful saying, "Every blade of grass has its angel bending over it, whispering, 'Grow, grow.'" I think every one of us has the voice of God's Spirit whispering to us, "You are loved. Become love. Grow, grow." And in that, we find our sense of who we are. In that, our self-esteem is grounded. Hear that voice again today in your life. Grow, grow. You are loved. Amen.